Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Music, Money, and Life. A quick announcement before we get started. The 90-day music licensing challenge is starting on Monday, June 6th. The 90-day music licensing challenge is for songwriters who want to make money licensing their music and TV and films. The program includes 90 daily music licensing leads, in-depth video tutorials, one-on-one coaching with me personally, and much, much more. If you register by May 29th, you'll get an awesome bonus package worth over five times the cost of the course that includes, number one, a half-hour Skype consultation with today's guest, LA-based producer Gary Gray. Number two, one of your songs mastered free of charge by Gary. Number three, a detailed written critique of one of your tracks by Gary Gray as well. And finally, you'll also get three free bonus courses on music production and how to make money with stock music libraries. For more information and to sign up, go to 90daymusiclicensingchallenge.com. That's 90, the numbers, 90daymusiclicensingchallenge.com. Okay, let's get to today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Music, Money, and Life. Today, I'm excited to be talking to Gary Gray. Gary is a man that I assume most of you are already familiar with. I don't think he needs an introduction, but let's give him one anyways, Gary. Gary is the resident producer at howtolicenseyourmusic.com. He is the go-to guy for me for all my production needs. Gary and I have collaborated on two courses so far. We have a third one in the works that we will talk about today a little bit. And Gary has a long, illustrious career in the music business. Too lengthy to go into here. Gary, how are you doing today?
Really good, Aaron. Thanks. And thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on the podcast. I'm excited to speak with you again. Gary has been a tremendous help, by the way, to howtolicenseyourmusic.com, not just to my clients, but to me personally. Gary is helping with everybody who signs up for the 90-day music licensing challenge. So the next 90-day music licensing challenge is starting on June 6th. So we're about 2 weeks away from the time we're recording this. If you sign up by May 29th, everybody who signs up, Gary, tell me if I'm missing anything. In addition to everything that's included in the course, they're getting a 30-minute Skype consultation with Gary. Gary is mastering one of your tracks for free, and you're also providing a written critique of one of their songs as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, all three of those things.
So that's a really Absolutely. Cool bonus package. Gary does this. I mean, I can tell this is definitely a labor of love for you. It's not like you're making a lot of money by doing this, but I appreciate you doing that.
Well, thank you, Aaron. No problem. I mean, it's the least I can do for everything that you've helped me with.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's start with kind of what's new in the world of Gary Gray. I know you have a lot of projects you're working on. You're out in LA, which is really cool. You're right in the heart of the music business. And I know lately you've been connecting with a lot of music supervisors and you're working on different projects. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Absolutely. It's been a bit of a whirlwind the last couple of months. What I've been trying to do is go about once a week up to Hollywood, LA, Beverly Hills. I live about an hour south of Hollywood. It's been really successful to just get out of the studio and go and get some networking done. A couple months ago, I went and visited a company called Hitcher Music. It's H-I-T-C-H-E-R. The person who heads Hitcher Music, which is a company that licenses music for TV, film, they're heavy on film. And one of the reasons is the guy who runs it, his name is Joe Rangel. And he used to be the head of music supervision and licensing for Miramax Films. And he's very well placed in the industry. So I had a chance to meet with Joe, and that was quite enlightening. The timing was perfect because one of the winners of the International Music Licensing Contest, which, just so those of you out here listening, Aaron is actually one of the judges on it, and it's something that I founded, and we just announced our winners. But one of the winners was a two-time winner from Stockholm. Her name is Maria Grönlund, and it turned out she won another contest in Stockholm and was flown to California. She actually was at Hitcher Music when I was there. So talk coincidence. Yeah. So we met in person for the first time, and we did a little photo op with Joe Rangel. But to get down to what could be useful for people, you know, with howtolicenseyourmusic.com, it was fascinating. I actually sat in the room. He let me come in there while he listened to 12 different composers who are all interested in getting their music licensed. He does something very unique. You know, I would say it's a good bonus for living in a place like LA. He will actually, from time to time, take personal listening sessions. He'll close deals based on some of these listening sessions. And I watched it happen right in front of me. It was amazing. So he actually listened all the way through 12 tracks, you know, one from each person. And he gave them a critique right then and there on their track. And there were three of them that he actually picked up. And I'm actually following up now to see where they're landing. But he's got some heavyweight connections with major motion pictures, big TV shows and such. And to listen to him critique these 12 people in that room was pretty eye-opening, and to hear him talk about the strategy. So I can go into that if you'd like. I mean, some fascinating stuff.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think any sort of tips you have, you know, especially based on this sort of up close and personal experiences, that would be great. What did you learn from the listening session?
Here's what I learned. Let's take the actual music itself. I mean, since my specialty with you is more in the production end of things and the engineering. And so on that count, you could see that even though he listened all the way through, because he basically gave his word, he said, I'm going to listen all the way through to your track. Well, one of the comments that came up was when some of the tracks started, he would say right away, he'd go, all right, if I was in my office, I would turn this off and I would pass on it right away.
Yeah.
And then now the question comes for all of us, you know, because we never hardly ever, if you do, you're lucky. If you ever get a chance to find out why a song was rejected, you're very lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So here he was giving his exact reasons why. And so what he said was, he goes, first of all, that track, the production of it is just muddy. It doesn't sound clear. It doesn't sound clean. It doesn't sound punchy. It doesn't sound like commercial tracks that I listen to on the radio. And then he said this, he goes, it doesn't have to sound exactly like a commercial track. He goes, that's not the point. He goes, but if you go to my website and listen to the tracks that I'm licensing, he goes, at least make the tracks that good. And then he said this, if I'm going to place a track in a TV show as a background under dialogue, he goes, that track doesn't have to be produced as well as something that I'm going to take and put on as the theme song for a TV show. He goes, you know, that theme song is not going to be under dialogue. It's going to be exposed and naked and bare, and it's going to be the branding for a TV show. So that one's going to have to be really, really good. Which brings up, you know, the question of mastering, which I do often. And mastering is something that with the loudness wars, you know, over the years, mastering sessions became louder and louder and louder and louder. And stuff that's on the radio was like very loud compared to what it used to be like 10, 15 years ago. But with licensing, what's interesting is that you don't need to master a track too loud. You don't need to worry about that. It goes to an editor, and the editor will do the final volume adjustments, and he has tracks coming in from different sources. And so those sources often come in at different volume levels. And what's interesting is that the ones with the lower volume levels tend to sound better, because you can take a lower volume level, lift it up, and control it. But if you have something that's really, really loud, it's probably been compressed and limited quite a bit. And then you compress it or push it down or turn it down, the quality is not comparable to something that's more dynamic, you know, that allows the louds and the softs to come through as something that's more squashed and limited and super loud. So that's an interesting point on producing for licensing. So he pointed out that there's different levels of production quality that can still make money for people.
Yeah, that's really good to point out, actually, that the fact that there's a wide range of licensing opportunities, and obviously for the really high profile, you know, what I'm sort of figuring out after all these years is for the really high profile placements, your music production-wise needs to be absolutely stellar. I mean, it needs to be almost as good as, you know, something you would hear on mainstream radio. But like you said, there's a wide variety of placements, and the background music and production music doesn't need to be quite as strong. It still needs to be good, obviously.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to know that too, because when somebody's starting out, if they try to start out into film trailers or major motion pictures, they're probably going to have a lot of losses.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if they start out, you know, they can get their productions, which might not be, you know, 10 out of 10, maybe it's a 9 or 8 out of 10, and it'll still get picked up into a sound bed for a reality television show or something like that.
Yeah, but it's interesting though, because I think if writers are not aware of this sort of range of placements and the production quality needed for each range, I think it can really hold you back, you know, because if you're not aware of it and you are licensing your music, but it's there are sort of background spots that don't pay a lot, you might think, yeah, my music is good enough to be licensed. I'm licensing it, you know, and you might not even know that you really need to improve it to move forward for, you know, higher profile, more lucrative spots.
Great point. No, great point. Because, you know, I have a number of students around the world because I do, you know, Skype lessons and stuff. And that comes up quite often, you know, where it's eye opening for them when they find out that, like you said, you know, let's say they got 5 or 10 spots and now they're, you know, getting a little cocky and they're like, yeah, now I'm going to try to do the major motion pictures. And then I go, okay, well, let's take a look at the quality of what we need to turn in. And it's eye opening, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Gary, can you, I know you're working on like some specific projects. Can you talk about like what shows and projects you've been working on lately?
Absolutely. I have a student, his name is Eddie Gray. One of his assignments was he asked me to help him put together his production package that he was submitting for a job. So I helped him do that. And he actually got the job. I was really proud of him. He got the job as composer for Born This Way, second season on A&E. It's funny because the student got the job, which was great. And then he turned around and he said, I can choose a number of composers to help on the show from my job. He goes, well, you're gonna be my first choice. You know, you're my mentor and my teacher. And that was very kind of him and very rewarding to know. So I've been putting together music for this TV show. That's also been a big learning experience because these things change like over time. What they did was they rebranded this show. It's in the second season, and they started out with like 500,000 viewers. Now they're up to 1 million viewers, and the show's doing really well. It's quite a touching, emotional show too. It's about people born with Down syndrome and what they go through in their families, and it's a real kind of tearjerker sometimes. So the music is also challenging in creating some, you know, contemporary sounds, but still emotional. We might even be able to play a little clip of a track, you know, maybe at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, that would be cool. Can we play it at the end?
I think we can play a little clip of that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that at the end of the podcast. That's really cool. So is this going to be a long-term project? Is this an ongoing, are you guys going to be supplying music on a regular basis for that show?
Yes. And this was really cool to hear. I just got a email 3 days ago that said their music supervisor saying that he used one of my tracks as an example to the other composers that he works with for production quality. And I was like, wow, that was really cool. And he's very happy with the production quality. So it's nice for me as a teacher to be able to kind of, you know, not just teach, but be able to show, you know, some credibility and walk the walk, because I can always appreciate that when someone's teaching me. I always want to know, like, you know, well, what are they doing? You know, not just what are they teaching? And I want to make sure I'm getting a good right now education. So that was really, you know, quite a rewarding thing to hear.
Yeah, that's really cool. It seems like Gary, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like in the time that I've known you, which has been probably like 3 years now, 2.5 or 3 years, it seems like you're doing a lot more networking and reaching out to people, particularly in the licensing industry. Is that true? Or were you always doing this even before we connected?
No, that's 100% true. And that's 100% because of you. I mean, I know we're doing this podcast and I'm not trying to like stroke you or anything, but it's 100% true. The day that I discovered howtolicenseyourmusic.com, I thought, okay, that's a perfect name for a website. That's exactly what I want to do. So, and there were other resources I tried out there. You know, there's something to me that weaves as a motif through everything that you write and everything that you present through your website, which is very human. And I talk about this. I've talked about it in other podcasts we've done, and I'll probably always talk about it, which is, to me, Aaron Davison equals don't give up. There's this thing that weaves through your website. Sounds maybe simple and stupid, but it's so strong. And the way that you do it is really effective because you always give very useful information. So when it came to networking, at one point I was like, you know, I'm not going to go once a week. I'm just going to maybe once a month, because I need to work on this project and that project, and I need to do this in the studio, and I need to stay in the studio. And I kept getting your emails, and that's really what kind of kicked me in the butt and gave me the spark to get out and do more networking. And anyway, I just wanted to say thank you, because that's why I've been doing it lately.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. That's interesting to hear, because when I'm thinking of like things to write about for my blog or topics to do videos on, it seems like after a while, there's only so much you can say about licensing. You know, there's only so much you can say about the technical aspect of licensing. So I find that those types of posts that are more sort of motivational oriented tend to get the greatest response. I get the most emails and the most comments about those types of posts, almost to the point where I'm thinking about eventually creating a separate website more sort of focused on just motivation and sort of self-help in general. But that's a separate topic, I guess. We'll kind of focus on the task at hand. But what I wanted to do, Gary, let's talk about our new course, because we've done two courses together, Mysteries of Mastering Solved, and we did another course called How to Produce Music That Will Get Licensed and Make You Money, which is kind of a mouthful. We have a third course coming out called Music Production Fundamentals. That's a few weeks away, but let's talk a little bit about what's inside that course.
Sure. The new course says Music Production Fundamentals, and the word, if you picture it, mental in fundamentals, is in capital letters. And this is just so key, because you'll have things that happen that can be quite damaging to somebody's career and set them back, which are things like this. You know, I hear this all the time. You know, if you don't have this kind of speaker in your studio at home, then, you know, you'll never have mixes that'll sound commercial, because what kind of speakers do you have? Oh, no, that's not going to work. That's not working. You have to have this kind of microphone. If you don't have this $8,000 microphone, then you're going to get a $100 sound out of your $100 microphone. And this is like a landmine. It's like, it's a dangerous trap. It's not true.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I point out in this course, and I consistently point this out, is that the mental aspect of what we do, from external factors and internal factors, can really, really affect how we listen even to our own mixes. The most important thing is to be able to listen to your mix, listen to your recording, and compare it to a commercial recording, and to really assess how close or how far away you are. So your ability to do that will equal your success. And the thing that can get in the way of being able to objectively assess how close you are or how far away you are from a commercial sounding production tends to be mental. It's mental. It's like listening to this little voice in the back of your head, the guy that said to you, if you don't have that kind of microphone, your vocals are not going to sound good. So when you listen to your track, you'll continue to say, the vocals don't sound good. Oh, I keep trying to tweak this. I keep trying to tweak that. Oh, I just give up. And it's just not true. See, that what it does is that's trying to put confidence into an object, into something external from you. The truth is, if you understand how to use your tools, then you will always carry your confidence inside of you, and you'll be able to use your tools to create great recordings. You don't have to have the most expensive speakers or microphones or anything. They just have to be good quality. As long as they are, you can get great quality recordings by knowing how to use good tools. If you don't have a big budget and you can't afford all the expensive stuff, no problem. If you don't have, you know, 10 years of experience, you only have a year, you're just starting out, no problem. You can hear your mixes just as good as the top pro mixers and engineers in the music industry hear their mixes. They're just people. You're a person. You can do it. It's very mental. So that you can be thrown for a loop, man. You can really get, like, you know, torpedoed in the side mentally, and you'll carry it with you, because it's an invisible subjective art form. It's not something that we can just put on the wall and say, is it blue or green? You know, it's open to so much opinion. And when somebody's giving you an opinion about a piece of gear and trying to get you to put your confidence in gear and these external objects, it's going to suck the confidence out of you. And so then if you're not using that speaker, if your speaker breaks, all of a sudden, you're no longer a good mixer. You see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's one of the things that I just wanted to say here, and that we really go into quite extensively in the course. music production fundamentals has been a really interesting process just to be putting this course together. What I've been doing is I've been actually researching by teaching, you know, like I teach so many students. And so I find out what they're running into, especially the newer students. This course, you know, Aaron asked me to put together a course that could be very useful to people just beginning in music licensing. And what I'm finding as I put this course together is, and I'm testing it out on certain people and sending it to some of my colleagues, and they're telling me this, they're saying, yeah, this is really, this would be great for somebody beginning. I wish I had this when I was beginning to getting into licensing. They said, but you know what, Gary, I'm actually learning a lot of this, and I've been doing licensing for like 15 years. So I'm getting that response back. And as I stood back to look at what it was that I was putting together on this curriculum, I realized that some of these basic fundamental things are things that, you know, even top pros, maybe, you know, they may have missed it along the way, or they kind of got out of certain habits, or they just maybe never even were exposed to some of the stuff that I'm presenting, because I'm presenting it from music production fundamentals. It's production and it's engineering, audio engineering, from the viewpoint of music licensing, which is a little different
right.
than someone that just wants to go make records, or someone that just wants to put an album together for their band. There's definite, absolute differences. And what I found out was, I discovered myself by doing this course, is that those differences, they fold back all the way to the beginning basics of how you approach production and engineering.
Is this for producers who are very new, like beginning producers? Or is this helpful even if you're an intermediate to advanced producer? Who would you say... Because we collaborated on this course together, but Gary, you really created most of the content that's in the course. So talk a little bit about who's like the perfect candidate for buying this course.
Okay, good. So it's absolutely for a beginner who wants to get a clean, fresh start and save probably a year to 2 years, which unfortunately I wasn't able to because I didn't have a course like this.
Yeah.
But it can save you, I'd say, a year to 2 years, absolutely, in your trek and journey through the music licensing production phases. So it's absolutely for a beginner, but it's also for anyone who's been trying their hand at music licensing and wants to move forward faster, I would say, you know. This would be perfect for both of those people, whether they be intermediate or even advanced with production. Because as I said, the production techniques in here are tailored exactly for licensing. So they may be an incredible producer engineer for an album, right? But there are things that you need to do differently and specifically for music licensing. So it really kind of, it's a wide net. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are distinct to music production when you're trying specifically to license your music.
Good. All right, so the first thing is something that I do cover at the beginning. I touch on it, of the how to produce music that will get licensed and make you money. But I go to it in depth in this course. And it's a simple concept, but it's so important for music licensing as compared to making an album. And that's just the subject of organizing. So what I found, like as I'm working on this TV show now, and I'm doing several other projects for supervisors and publishers, and that is, there will be times when you'll see an opportunity for licensing. And let's say you have a track that might fit it, or you have a little demo that you made, and you go, oh man, if I finish my demo, I could submit it for that licensing opportunity. Well, there's a certain way that you need to organize your tracks and your projects and your sessions. And I go into that in detail, but I can tell you this, when you put together a session for music licensing, there's one thing that's very, very vital, and that is you'll be asked for stem files. Stem files are basically just group files, like all your drums together in one file, all your guitars in one file, all your bass in one file, synthesizers, etc. Those are stem files. Well, when you're making an album for your band or something, you may not even think about or never need or never use, or you don't even go into stem files at all. With music licensing, if you don't consider that and set up your session that way, and there's a specific way you do it, which can help speed along your process and give you higher quality, you're going to have trouble getting your songs accepted, and you may run into some reject points. Here's something interesting, Aaron, that I found out, is that I've had my students start to send out, they'll take the 90-day challenge or the 180-day challenge.
Yeah.
And when they're sending out their songs for submissions or to get somebody's ear, they will tell them in the communication that they have STEM files available. They'll even list what STEM files they have, and they'll maybe even put a link to their STEM files. Like, they're not loading up the person with MP3 files and stuff, but they may even put a link. Now, that person might not listen to that link, but when they see it, they go, "Ah, this is what I need. I want to work with this guy. He understands STEM files." So you can see just that one concept I talked about is something very different than just making an album.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because I have a lot of musicians who will send me music for musicpictures.com, my music marketing company. And a lot of times writers will have tracks that they've recorded years ago, but they no longer are in contact with their producer. They don't have instrumental versions. They don't have access to STEM files. And it's not that you can't license that music. You can still potentially, like, if the track is amazing, you could still potentially license it. But it's so advantageous to have access to what you're talking about and to think about this going into this. Like, if you're trying to license music, you need to think about the production and have an instrumental version, have, you know, different, like a WAV file and an MP3 and access to things like STEM files. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'll give you a little look behind the scenes, a little secret that I just discovered now. That's a trend that's happening with television shows. I mean, in films, it's been going on, but in television shows, this is going on more and more now, which is this. The editor that I'm sending my tracks to is a producer engineer himself. He's a musician. He's not just an editor. So more and more, the editors that are being hired for these television shows and video games and et cetera, they're people that are very heavily experienced as musicians and producers and engineers, not just editors. So here's what's been happening, and this is very interesting. You know, STEM files, as I said, were always important, but they're even more important now because these editors will take your song, and they might use like 30 seconds in this part of the TV show. And then at the end of the show or near the end of the show, there's some real emotional thing that happens. And so they'll yank your guitar track stem, put it there, and add their own strings or something to your motif. So they're actually, and which is in the contracts for all these TV shows, you know, where you give them permission to, once you turn over your tracks, to use your stem files, because that's partly what you're licensing. Is not just the finished track, but each individual stem file. I thought that was fascinating. So what I did was I spent a lot more attention on how I put those stems together and how I was composing them so that they would stand on their own and sound like a musical statement and not just like, oh, that's a little guitar part. I worked on my arrangement a little more, and that's something that I go over with my students. And it's a really cool thing to know.
Yeah. No, that's a really good tip. You talked about sharing some other tips that you've learned from music supervisors, or did we already cover that at the beginning of the podcast?
I have some more. Yeah.
Okay. Like, yeah, absolutely. Let's if you could share a few more tips of things you've been learning working in LA with your contacts there, let's do that. And then we'll wrap up. I need to get running. It's about 7 o'clock here, my time on Sunday night. And, I have plans with the lady tonight, so my time is running out.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could share a few more tips, Gary, that would be great.
Yeah, no problem. So this was also from Joe Rangel at Hitcher Music. Remember I told you he was listening to the 12 people?
Yeah.
Well, once he was done, he gave this kind of a heart-to-heart talk, and this was just amazing. I mean, here's a guy that was, you know, one of the top executives in the music supervision of major motion pictures for years, and now he's doing this licensing company. And he addressed everyone there and he goes, I'm going to tell you guys a strategy that I discovered about 8 months ago that I'm using that's working really well. And I wanted to share it with you so that you could possibly get more licensing gigs. And he said this, he said, the music supervisors that have the budgets to actually pay, you know, decent money to the composers, producers, publishers, he said, you know, more and more, here's what I've been finding working with them, because I work with them, you know, a lot of them face to face and on a personal basis. He said, I send them a track. He goes, they listen to the track, and the track may be brilliant. And they go, wow, this is really good. I could use this for this project. And then I'll say, oh, good, I'll send it over to you. They go, well, let me ask you a few more questions. What's the story with this? Is this a band? Is this a composer? What is this, a songwriter? What's the story behind this person? or what's the story behind this band? And so he found this trend that's happening, which is that the music supervisors, through television shows and through video games and through all these different, you know, commercials, they're very interested in dealing with somebody who has a story and who is prolific. So they want someone, they say, send me three more things from this guy. And if he can't send three more things from that person, so he says sometimes he'll get rejected on that one brilliant track.
Yeah, just because they don't have more tracks in the queue.
Yeah. Yeah, and so then, and then when they ask for the story, what he started to do is this. He set up the strategy and he said it started paying off immensely. And I thought this was so cool. He has a whole network of young music supervisors who are starting out, and they're kind of these hip young people that are into the, like, they know all the new bands, they know all the new sounds, they know all the new EDM genres that pop up every week. And they're like, they got their finger on the pulse of the whole young market. And so in order to tell the story of his clients, what he does is he suggests that these writers, even if they're bedroom composers, he suggests that they do things like this: put up a website, get your social media going, and tell your story. If you're a singer-songwriter and you play once a month at your local bar, he goes, present that, tell your story. Tell your musical story. Give it a little history. Get some press. He even says this: if you can, get a publicist. Mm. And he said, I found this one thing has been making the biggest difference to my guys who are making the most money in licensing right now. I actually told him to get a publicist, to start putting things out on blogs, get a TV show interview, get a radio interview. Get these bloggers to write about you. Start getting your story out there. He said, so what I do is I get the story out there. I get the buzz going with the young music supervisors about these people. And then he goes, then I present him to the music supervisors who are generally a little older in age and they're more experienced and they have the budgets. They have the money. Because what they do is they get the tracks and then they go to their young intern and they say, hey, listen, check out this guy and see if he's like active out there. I want to see what is the story of this guy. The young intern will then go on Facebook, go on Instagram, go on all the Twitter, go everywhere, look at their websites, and the intern will come back and say, yeah, this guy's, he's active, he's out there. And he'll go, okay, good, 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 good. And he'll say even, yeah, I've heard about it. You know, I checked with these other supervisors I know and they know about him. And the reason they knew about him is because Joe spread the word with these, like he has two levels of networking. You know, one is the less experienced music supervisors and then the more experienced supervisors. And so then he said he started to nail the big money licensing deals. And so I thought to myself, wow, that's fascinating. And so I started talking to some of my students about that. And even on a small basis, it started working. You know, they just started getting their story out there and their publicity out there. And then the music supervisors seem to, it's a human, like that's one of the things I forget. I don't know about you, Aaron, but you know, sometimes I forget because it's emails and it's, you know, files and it's just, it's kind of cold, you know, like without the face-to-face. And you forget that this is a human industry. Like, and that's probably the biggest thing that's hit me that you've helped me with, which is you've reminded me and you've made me go out there and network. And now I realize, you know, this is such a human industry. They want to hear your story. They want to know more about you. They want to know how much you've written, and they want to interact with somebody who's actually trying to do something with their career, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. Why do you think, and I have sort of a theory as to why there's such an emphasis on having a story, on being active. Why do you think that's the case, Gary? You would think on one hand, if you have an amazing song and that's all you have and you have a full-time job and a family and you're doing other things, but you have an amazing song or a couple songs that would be enough to license them. Why do you think there's such an emphasis on this overall being active in your career?
Great question. And I was asking Joe that too. And he said this, he said, you know, there will be success with people who don't have that. There will be, but it'll be limited. He goes, what I'm finding is that the music supervisors want to latch on to something that has a history to it, because then if it has a history to it, they consider it will have a future history.
Yeah,
and,
that makes
and
sense.
And so I think that's the best answer I could give you, is they're looking for somebody or some band or some person that will have a continuing future so that they can invest their own energy and their own resources as a music supervisor into that band or that person, knowing that it's going to be an ongoing relationship for everybody. And it's easier for them to do that than to keep finding new people for this one thing.
So, yeah, absolutely. So they know, in other words, it's not going to just be a one-off, one-time thing where there's this great song and they license it, and then this person never does anything again. I think it sort of ties in to this thing that I've talked a lot about over the years, which is the importance of being persistent and following up when you're just trying to sort of break through initially. And I think it's connected in the sense that music supervisors – I mean, I always try to put myself in the shoes of anyone that I'm dealing with, whether it's personally or professionally. But something that used to really irritate me is this thing of like reaching out to a music supervisor or a publisher and not getting feedback right away. Or sometimes they'll say something like, I'm really busy this week. Follow up with me next week. And it happens so much that it almost seems like a game people are playing with you. And it can be a little irritating because it's kind of like, really, you're that busy that you can't just check out my track or email me back. But I did this course a few weeks ago with Kathy Heller, this singer-songwriter who's done really well in advertising. And we've developed a little bit of a communication. But something she said in the course that really struck a chord with me is she's like, when you're initially trying to get into this, like she said it from the perspective of creating her own company now. She's like, if someone emails me, I might not get back to them right away, but if I see that they're persistent in reaching out to me every few weeks and they're dedicated and they're devoted, she's like, eventually I will want to work with them, or at the very least, I'll listen to their tracks and respond to them. And I think it's just the fact that there's so many musicians trying to do this. If you're a supervisor or you own a catalog or record label or whatever, I think you have to have some sort of screening process, some sort of filtering process. So you're going to want to work with the people that are the most dedicated, the most devoted, the ones that are active on social media, the ones that are playing shows, the ones that are, the more you're doing to build your career, people will see that. And I think eventually they will respond, but it can be very frustrating. And I think a lot of musicians, they just give up because they're like, shit, this just seems too hard.
Yeah, no, that's so real to me. And it's even becoming more real every day because I have these contacts, and you and I talked about this personally, because I'm getting more contacts with, music supervisors and publishers. Now, when I'm finishing a job for a client and I'm producing and engineering their stuff and then mixing and mastering it, I'm starting to shop stuff now. And so people are starting to send me some stuff to shop. So now I know what it feels like on the other end.
Yeah.
And believe me, it's like the guy that persists, that follows up. And you've said this so many times, and now I see how right you are. I always agreed with you, but now I see how right you really are, is that you really have to follow up. It's just how you follow up. But just go ahead. I call it the smiling bulldog. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people are just a bulldog, but they're not smiling, and so it kind of feels annoying. But if it's a smiling bulldog, you want to pet them, and you go, okay, yeah, I'll work with you. You know what I mean? And so you have to temper your attitude,
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You want to be persistent. I always say err on the side of persistence as opposed to patience, but without being annoying. So, exactly. Don't bother people every single day, but be persistent. And, in the meantime, in the interim, if you're trying to get through to a supervisor or a label or a publisher, keep working on your tracks, keep recording your music, keep upping your game, and eventually people will take notice. So listen, Gary, on that note, let's wrap this up. My girlfriend literally walked by with a note that said, if you don't wrap this up in 5 minutes, I'm leaving without you. So,
all right. Well, I don't want to be a part. I don't want to be a part of a nasty scene.
I don't want that to happen. So let's do this. The 90-Day Music Licensing Challenge, it starts June 6th. It's a 90-day-long program for songwriters who want to license music. So it's 90 daily licensing leads. It's video tutorials. It's in-depth interviews like the one you heard today. And the bonuses that I mentioned that Gary is throwing in, 30-minute call with Gary. You get two calls with me. Gary's mastering one of your tracks for free. He's also providing a detailed written critique. All that for $97. But to get the bonuses, you have to sign up by May 29th. The course starts June 6th. So if you're interested in that, go to 90daymusiclicensingchallenge.com. And the course that we talked about in the podcast, Music Production Fundamentals, will be released probably late June. We don't have a specific day, but mid to late June we'll be unfolding that, launching that. But if you sign up for the 90-day challenge, you get the two previous courses Gary and I created together as a free bonus as well. So with all that out of the way, Gary, thank you so much for doing this. I'm excited about everything you're working on and about the projects we're collaborating on, which we can have a question for you real quick after the podcast. But let's do this. I want to play this track that you composed this track for the show Born This Way on A&E, right?
Yeah, it was the guitar track itself was laid down by Eddie Gray. And then I basically put together the remaining instrumentation, and then I mixed and mastered it. Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Let's close with that. A collaboration between Eddie Gray and Gary Gray. Yeah. Did I say that right?
He spells his name different. That's true, yeah. His is G-R-E-Y, and mine's G-R-A-Y. I also have some other tracks here, some short clips of projects that I've been working on recently that have all been accepted for publishing deals or licensing deals. So you'll hear that after this one. How does that sound?
Yeah, absolutely. So no relation to each other, Eddie Gray and Gary Gray, and this track is called Ride the Wave.